The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, everyone. Renee Powers here, and I am joined by the illustrious Mariquita. Mariquita, hello.
Greetings.
We are talking today about books by, you know, cishet white men that we unabashedly love, begrudgingly and unabashedly. So I strongly believe that feminists come in all genders. Are these feminist books? Not necessarily, but feminists can still like these books.
We're whole people. We're whole people.
And I will say this is inspired by the book Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson. I read this about a month ago, and you know what? I laughed my ass off. I think it is so funny and so well done, and I'll give you a quick synopsis. Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson is about a pair of friends from boarding school. One is from a wealthy family. One is from a impoverished family, but they end up at the same boarding school. It's two girls. And fast forward like 20 years later, and the wealthy one calls up her friend and says, "Hey, my husband, the senator, from his first marriage has two kids, they're twins, and they need a nanny. They're coming to live with us. Will you be that nanny?" And this woman's like, "Sure." And she goes to live with them, and these kids spontaneously combust.
Oh, I didn't see that coming.
But it's like something they just do when their emotions get too high. They just catch on fire. Okay. It is hilarious and so irreverent and so funny and so well done. And I was like, God damn it. Why is this just like a standard white dude writing this funny ass story from women's perspective? And it's really, really good.
You know, they do get like a lot more chances than people of color or, you know, people, you know, of genders other than, you know, cis male. But they do still sometimes do well, you know?
And we got to give credit where credit is due. I thought that book was fantastic. So I hopped onto our podcaster Slack and I was like, does anybody want to talk about dudes, male authors?
Yeah.
And you are up to the game. Why did you take my bait?
Okay. Well, partially it's because back when I was in college, I read Cunt by Inga Muccio. I haven't looked up her, how to pronounce her surname. But she issued herself a challenge at that point in time to not read anything by men, not to consume any media that was created by men for like a year and see how that changed her perspective. And I realized at that time that like, I mean, I became super hyper aware of the fact that like everything I consumed basically was produced by cis men. And so I shifted my perspective and I shifted my aim and have thought about it a lot since then. And that was many, 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 many years ago. But so it's something that I sort of, I don't know, I give more thought to it than I probably ought to, but I thought it would be a good topic.
Yeah. And I have to shout out our blogger, Nina. She wrote an excellent post, probably about a year ago, about how she was only reading women and femme identified authors and how she thinks that hurt her reading experience. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it is important when we're talking about expanding our bookshelf that we maybe not go too far in any direction.
Yeah.
Because diversity means bringing in all voices and not excluding any. So that is my That is my caveat to today's.
We're not misandrists, you know. We don't.
No, absolutely. I mean, sometimes I am.
Fair.
On occasion, yes.
Fair. We need balance in the world.
Exactly. But I've got 5 books that I would like to mention that are by cis men. 2 of them are queer men, so I feel like that is a little more diverse. But they're all white, mm-hmm. from what I can tell. So I think I will start with, I don't know, I guess I'm just going to tell you about, well, let's start with Stephen King, because I know that you like Stephen King too.
Yeah.
And one of my all-time favorite books is The Stand.
Yes.
I just think it is so excellent, engrossing, fantastic. Everything that King is known for, he is the king of it, mm-hmm. for a reason. What's your favorite Stephen King?
You know, I'm trying not to piggyback right on you, but I do really love The Stand. I loved Carrie too, even though that's like kind of upset, like very problematic. But I came late to Stephen King too. I was very pretentious about Stephen King. And so finding out that I really liked his books was upsetting in a different way.
There is so much good literature out there, good horror out there, good suspense, but sometimes you just got to go back to the master of it.
Oh, and I was a pretentious child, you know. Part of maturing has been learning not to be like so buttoned up.
Yeah, and letting yourself like what's popular.
Yeah, yeah. But I liked The Stand, and I wish that there were more, you know, we always wish there were more female characters, but I thought the way that he portrayed his female characters in that book, from what I recall, wasn't too, you know, one-dimensional.
There is, I think the...
It wasn't three-dimensional, but...
It wasn't three-dimensional. But I don't, yeah, I think you're right. It wasn't one-dimensional, but it certainly wasn't three-dimensional. I'm thinking particularly, and I forget the character's name, but the kind of sage old black woman who's blind and can kind of like see the future. And it's like,
see, I forgot all about that.
You've got the magical black person. Okay, I see. Like that is problematic. Mm-hmm. King has his moments, but he is a storyteller for our time, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, The Shining was pretty good too.
I couldn't, that one is too scary for me. Horror, totally fine. But jumping out at things, that one messed me up.
Well, one of the horror authors that I really like that's, you know, a man, is Garth Hendricks, who just had a book come out, The Final Girl Support Group, I believe it's called. I haven't read it.
Is it Grady Hendricks?
Grady Hendricks. Oh my gosh, yes.
It's fine. You're sleep deprived.
I'm sleep deprived. Oh my God. I'm very sleep deprived. Grady Hendricks. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
I read a couple of books by him and they're just fun. You know, they're delightful. They're horror adjacent, but they don't take themselves too seriously. They're irreverent. And I really appreciate that.
I love that you just used the word irreverent because I was making a few notes for our chat tonight. And I was like, what is it about Nothing to See Here by Kevin Wilson that I've already mentioned that I loved so much? And I came to, I think I said out loud, oh, I really like irreverent books that just don't take themselves too seriously. That's exactly what it is. The other book that immediately comes to mind, which is written by a woman of color. So the opposite of the spectrum, is We Ride Upon Sticks by Quan Berry. That book is so funny to me and so irreverent and just like such a like dark humor. And I think that, I think that's kind of the through line here is a little bit of dark humor that I really appreciate.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is like men are just getting published more than women or non-binary people in general. So the pool to pull from is deep. There.
Yes. And maybe that's why I hesitate to make this podcast, you know, that I don't necessarily want to give more accolades to people who have it fairly easy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know that you have done a little bit of research on the racial component as well. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the information that I have is a couple of years old, and there's a New York Times article that was called Just How White Is the Book Industry? And I believe that was from 2020, but they found in 2018 that 89% of fiction books were written by white authors, which is wild. Mm-hmm. And that mm-hmm. the heads of the big four publishing houses were all white, as well as 85% of the people who edit the books.
Yeah. And so what that does is it minimizes the lens. I don't know what the correct word is, but that the lens gets smaller instead of getting wider mm-hmm. on like whose stories are worth telling. The Other Black Girl by Zakiya Delilah Harris is a great exploration of race in the publishing. Yeah, race in the publishing industry. It goes on a very different path halfway through that you don't see coming, and it's excellent. But
I loved that book.
Yes. The first half is exactly what we're saying, what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
How white the publishing industry is. I also have to shout out the Instagram account Dear Publishers. They are putting pressure on publishers to do more than make statements about race, actually hire, publish their statistics, be really transparent about the diversity and lack thereof of their workforce. And so their project, it's just at Dear Publishers on Instagram. They're doing excellent work.
See, I think that's why I couldn't find a whole lot of information, because that information hasn't heretofore been very available. And so you kind of have to like aggregate it based on the bestseller lists. And that's a flawed metric.
Yeah, yeah. And we see that white men dominate those bestseller lists. And it's not just that their voices are, or their stories are getting published, but it's also that the marketing money is funneled to them, because we see this in movies too, you know, like woman superhero movies don't sell. Well, no, because you don't put enough money behind them that you do on the next Iron Man and Captain America.
Yeah. And that, on top of that, to add insult to injury, you know, there we are starting to see more diversity in the bestseller list, but the mid-list titles are still quite primarily white men, you know, and so there will be a couple of folks that rise to prominence on the bestseller list, and it kind of seems to me to be a way of publishing to kind of like pat itself on the back, like, look, we're doing something. But those folks are still getting smaller advances. You know, they're still getting less advertising. They're getting a lot less attention. They're having to work a lot harder. And then you've still got all the titles in the middle that's just pretty much homogenous still.
Yeah. Yeah. Our friends Get Bullish are the minds behind slogans like, we will dance on the graves of the patriarchy and drink the bitter tears of mediocre men, and out of patience with deeply disappointing men in unmerited positions of authority. Available on mugs and keychains. How about a shirt that says, I've heard enough from old white men? We've got you covered. But feminist-owned Get Bullish wants you to know that they don't have just aggressively patriarchy-mocking pens, socks, holiday ornaments, and more. They actually have over 6,000 gift items, including, surprisingly, stuff for your dad. Really. Grandmas, bosses, clients, sex buddies. Who doesn't love funny notepads or wacky socks or an apron that says something about cats? Delight and amuse the whole fam. You can do all your holiday shopping and shop small and woman-owned at shop.getbullish.com. Use code BOOKCLUB10 throughout November for 10% off your whole holiday haul. That's shop.getbullish.co. That's shop.getbullish.com and use code BOOKCLUB10. So I want to shift a little bit, because I'm hearing criticism saying, well, but if it's a good story, who cares who tells it? I mean, that's really something that's really common in the pushback of, you know, trying to diversify industries. So one of the books by a white dude that I love is Bad Blood by John Carreyrou. And this is about the Theranos scandal. It was the investigative journalistic kind of opus masterpiece of Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos, which is back in the news because she's currently on trial. I have a lot of feelings about Theranos. and Elizabeth Holmes, which I will save for another episode. But the author, I believe that he was a Washington Post reporter. It's been a year or so since I've read his book. So fantastically done. Like, I thought that this was really well done investigative reporting, long form investigative reporting. But because Elizabeth Holmes was a young woman, I think it had that reporting been done by a woman, I think it would have been so much more nuanced and interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It would have to be, no matter what talent he has, he's missing some of the invisible pieces that, yes, that a female author or a female journalist would just be privy to.
Yeah. However, on the other hand, one of the other books by men that I wanted to shout out was Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow. Yeah. And I think that Ronan Farrow is a queer man, for one. He is the son of Woody Allen and Mia Farrow, and, you know, witnessed firsthand the sexual abuse and the media circus and his, you know, and Woody Allen's, like, didn't fucking do anything about it.
Yeah.
Really. Like, he's still famous and raking in the big bucks. He got the front seat to that circus, right? I think that situated him perfectly to break the Harvey Weinstein story, because he was protected by privilege, because he was, you know, part of a media family, because he was sensitive to sexual coercion because of his sister. Like, I think that that's a way to utilize male privilege, right? Had that been written by a woman, I think that her career could have been decimated and Harvey Weinstein would still be out there.
Absolutely. Easily. He really used this platform very well, and mm-hmm. it's much appreciated. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I see there's, you know, there are arguments on both sides, and I don't think either one of us would want to say that there aren't.
And I don't think either one of us would say, like, these books shouldn't have been written. I think that Bad Blood should have been written, and Carrie, you did a great job. Could have been stronger mm-hmm. had it been a woman. Catch and Kill absolutely was necessary for us as a culture, right? Mm-hmm. have that written. And Ronan Farrow did such an amazing job that I don't think anybody else could have written that book.
Yeah. I really want to read Empire of Pain by Patrick Radden Keefe.
Yes. Emma yes. did a podcast on it. And yeah. we'll link that in the show notes. We'll link Nina's post. We'll link anything we mentioned here. But yeah, that's another one that's on my TBR that's like, oh, it's written by another white dude.
I know. Well, in 2020, I actually wrote down every book that I read and the date that I read it. And I just combed through it. I didn't do it this year because this year's been a dumpster fire, but I combed through it to see how many books were written by men that I read and how many were written by white men. So I read 86 books altogether. Really wanted to get to 100, didn't make it. But of those 86 books, 13 were written by men. And of those 13, 7 were written by white men. So less than 10%. I feel like I deserve a good for you award, a cookie, something. I don't know. Even, I mean, it wasn't intentional. I just read what interested me, yeah. you know?
Yeah. And I think that's why I picked up Bad Blood and Catch and Kill when I did, because I had a year of only reading women. I think 2019 was my year that I only read women, except I read Great Expectations by Charles Dickens. I reread it for a podcast project on somebody else's podcast. And Dickens is such a misogynist that I feel like that was perfect.
Yeah. If you're going to break the
loop him in, loop him in a year of all women. But yeah, I think that I immediately, after that year, I decided, okay, that was fun. That was a fun experiment. But I want to reintroduce men to my reading life.
Yeah. Yeah. What I don't want to do is put myself in a corner where I say, mm-hmm. I'm not going to read that book because it was written by a cis white dude, you know?
Exactly.
That's
exactly
not enriching my life. And one of my favorite authors is a cishet white dude, and it's David Mitchell, and he wrote Bone Clocks is one of my favorite books. All of his books exist in the same universe, so if you read them all, you can pick up the little pieces and Easter eggs and things like that. And I, you know, there's no way in which my life would be better if I said I'm not going to read it because he's a guy.
Yeah, exactly. Before we wrap up, I do want to point out one misstep that white men, I think, aren't as tuned into. And so the fifth book by a dude that I would love to mention is The House on the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune. T.J. Klune has said in the past that this book was inspired by residential schools, Native American residential schools, or First Nations residential schools, I think Canadian schools. And this kind of bubbled back up on Twitter, book Twitter, after, you know, Canada found so many unmarked graves at these residential schools. His whiteness, I think, made him blind to and insensitive to that history. And the fact that he could use it for a huge book. I mean, that book was everywhere for a while. It's excellent. It gives me lots of warm fuzzies. I mentioned it in a recent episode that I love it. And at the same time, right, he could use his platform, use his notoriety, use his privilege to bring even more attention to residential schools, the kind of generational trauma of Native American people, Indigenous people, First Nations people. And from what I have seen, he hasn't spoken on that since that early interview. And so I would be interested to see what he does with that backlash, if anything, because all I have seen so far is silence. Yeah, so
that's disappointing. And that book was, yeah, it is a beautiful, fun book. I listened to the audiobook in the wee hours, which I had ample opportunity to do. And it, you know, it's full of optimism and lightness, but I'm disappointed to hear. I feel like there is a tendency, there can be a tendency to say these people's stories need to be told and I can tell them, instead of asking if that's appropriate, you know, or how are we uplifting these stories? Who's got the microphone?
Yeah. I'm a white woman speaking about this. The criticism I have seen for the most part has come from other white readers. And I want to link a blog post in the show notes from a blogger named Gesticulates, is what she goes by. And she mentions that, you know, what if we're calling on, quote unquote, canceling T.J. Klune for being inspired by the stories of residential schools, what does that do if those readers aren't, you know, removing his books from their TBRs and replacing it with books by Indigenous authors? Like, what does it actually do if we're not uplifting the voices who we're saying matter, and instead just criticizing the voices that have missed up? That's not restorative justice to me.
No, it's not. And I think it's also fine to just say we're criticizing because there's criticism to be done, but we don't need to necessarily cancel, you know.
Yeah,
it's a great opportunity to pivot, to say, you know, T.J. Klune, it could have done better.
Yeah.
But now that we're talking about it, here are some authors that you should check out if you're really interested in this, and you should be.
Who are some of your favorite Indigenous authors? It is November. It is the month of Indigenous history and Native American voices. Yeah. So who are some of your favorites?
Well, Louise Erdrich, always.
Gotta say, hell yeah. Louise Erdrich.
And I love Louise Erdrich. And Therese Marie Melois wrote Heartberries, and that was an excruciating, beautiful, painful, incredible book, and one of my favorites that I read last year. How about you?
I loved Black Sun by Rebecca Roanhorse. Absolutely one of my favorite books of last year, one of my favorite interviews that I got to do last year as well. And so I just pre-ordered the next book in that series. I'm really excited about that.
Fantastic.
But yes, Louise Erdrich as well. And Erica T. Worth, she writes a lot of short stories. The short story collection I'm thinking of right off the bat is called Buckskin Cocaine, and it is really gritty and raw and honest, and I really, really like kind of the noir feel of it. And I will link all of those in the show notes.
Wonderful. I love that our conversation about books by cis white men that we begrudgingly love has turned
turned into a celebration of Native American authors.
It, as well it should.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Go check out Indigathon on Instagram, everyone. They are doing they've got prompts for all of for the whole month on, you know, suggestions and authors and recommendations for reading and decolonizing your bookshelf, reading Indigenous authors and decolonizing your bookshelf. So again, I will leave that in the show notes as well. Mariquita, any last thoughts or words?
No, I don't think so. It's just been so much fun to talk with you about this secret guilty pleasure of mine.
Same. All right. Where can we find you online?
You can find me at on Instagram at @O_Murray.
And I am on Instagram at Belle Renee, and I am the thumbs behind the Feminist Book Club Box account on Instagram as well. So you can feel free to DM us there and let us know. Would love to know some of your guilty pleasures. some cis white men that you like to read. All right, Mariquita. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of Feminist Book Club, the podcast. Want to be part of the club? Here's how you can join us. Obviously, subscribe to our podcast and leave a rating and review for brownie points. Follow along on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, and TikTok. All of those links are in the show notes. Sign up for our newsletter to be the first to know what our next monthly book pick is. And check out our award-winning monthly book subscription service. Oprah Magazine named it one of their favorite book boxes, and Shonda Rhimes called us one of her favorite subscription boxes in general. There are multiple membership levels for any budget, and it's an excellent way to support the show and the voices you heard today. See you in the club.
A well-read woman is a dangerous creature.